At the end of the movie Camelot, King Arthur tells a young boy about what was once this idyllic, most idyllic place on earth. His battle has been lost, his friends are gone, his heart is broken, and yet instead of being distraught or angry, Arthur sings with a voice full of forgiveness and asks the boy to remember. Ask every person if they've heard the story, and tell it strong and clear if they have not, that once there was a fleeting wisp of glory called Camelot. Arthur asks the boy to tell the story of King Arthur and the Round Table with pride and joy, to keep it going from generation to generation. Tell your children and your grandchildren, and as you remember, recall the story, you will keep it alive. Even though everything around you may be falling apart, by remembering, you will keep the dream alive. And maybe, just maybe, this one brief shining moment will come again. Preacher Barbara Lundblad suggested that as we hear this story from the Gospel of John, we might imagine Jesus singing a similar song as he gathers his disciples together to give them his last best words of advice. He sings an endearing song of hope and promise, while in the background, Judas is preparing to betray him, Caiaphas is planning his arrest, and despite all of his best intentions, Peter will deny ever knowing him at all. But for now, as they gather together to celebrate the Passover, Jesus shares his last words, his final instructions with those who are dearest to him. It's fairly easy to imagine Jesus calling them to remember that wondrous wisp of glory that they had shared when light had come into the darkness of the world. With such a song, the disciples could go on. They could be comforted as they recalled those brief days of glory. Their memories could sustain them as they waited for Jesus to return. But this story, the story of the Gospel of John, wasn't written for them, or even by them. This story, the one that we have, was written in the midst of a community for whom Jesus was only a shared memory. Most of those in John's community had never met Jesus. And by John's time, most, if not all, of the disciples had died. And so things were not the same as they had once been. The temple in Jerusalem had been destroyed, which for many was a sign that the end was near. But the end didn't come, and Jesus didn't return, and life went on. And that was, in many ways, the hardest part of all. Jesus hadn't returned. Even when all of the signs seemed right, he didn't come back. And so there was this community of believers who felt pushed to the very edge of despair, and John knew that they were in a dangerous position, because that kind of grief and anguish can lead to hopelessness and defeat. And so John pulled together as many of the things that Jesus had said into this one section of the gospel that is known as the farewell discourses. In some ways, it's like the advice a dad gives to a daughter as she goes off on her first day in the real world as a graduate from college. Or it's like the things a mother says when her son is about to get married. Or maybe the last lecture of a beloved teacher right before they retire. As Jesus sat at the table that Thursday night before his arrest, he says the same things over and over in slightly different ways, but at the center of all the things that he says is love. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words, and I am giving you these commands so that you may love one another. In that moment, the disciples may have felt more like the knights of the Round Table than the followers of a man who is about to die, but as the days passed, I'm betting that the disciples were more than a bit overwhelmed by the task that Jesus had laid before them. They were in danger. They were in trouble. Could they truly love the way that Jesus loved? It was hard enough to love each other when Jesus was there to remind them of who they were and how they were supposed to behave. And after he was gone, it just got harder. Our first reading today is just one of the examples that you can find in the Acts of the Apostles of the arguments that the disciples had in the years after Jesus' death and resurrection. Their Lord had commanded them to love one another, but sometimes loving others was complicated and messy. Did they really have to love people who weren't a part of their community? And so it was one thing if the Spirit led Peter to go to see Cornelius and go on this trip and meet these Gentiles who wanted to be baptized. It was one thing if the Spirit said, well, baptize them, that's what you should do. But why did he have to eat dinner with them? It may seem petty for us, but sharing a meal with other people is a powerful thing. It creates connections and communities. It can demonstrate acceptance and support. Think about it. That time when you brought that special someone home for dinner to meet your family, oh, you wanted them to be liked and loved because you knew it was an important moment. And there's also a reason why big family dinners can be so nerve-wracking, because sometimes the people who are gathered together don't behave the way they should. Being in community at table is an important thing. And for the Jews of that time, the rules about what you ate and how you ate it, those rules had been an important part of maintaining their identity. There was so much pressure for them to conform to being like the Romans who were there and were in their country and had taken everything over. They should somehow be like the Romans, eat like the Romans, worship like the Romans. And so to eat with Gentiles, despite their having baptized, it seemed wrong. Shouldn't they change their behavior to be respectful of the traditions and the practices of Israel? And the arguments go on and on. And Peter explained what he was doing, and he said it wasn't him, but it was the work of God, that God was moving the church forward. And so if the church was going to really love the way that Jesus loved, it was going to have to include the Gentiles just the way they were. Now, to be clear, although the final verses of our reading today make it sound like everything ended well, the continuing argument goes on and on until finally they had to call all of the disciples together, all of the church leaders together, to have a special council in Jerusalem to solve the Gentile question. Would they have to live by the Jewish law? Would they have to be circumcised? What was going to happen? It wasn't easily done, and these were people who had seen Jesus love all kinds of people. They had had an example in Jesus Christ of what it meant to love others. Jesus loved Samaritans and Romans, lepers and demoniacs. He loved liars and thieves and cheats and scoundrels and everything in between. And the disciples had seen firsthand the kind of behavior that Jesus was expecting. So if they struggled with the commandment to love, how are the believers in John's community going to manage? And for that matter, how are we to pull it off? Because let's be honest, love is not easy. True love, real love, the love that we know in Jesus Christ requires sacrifice. It makes your heart ache, makes your bones weary. Real love takes work and effort. It involves change and transformation. True love imagines the future and hopes for the best, and it knows that nothing stays the same forever. But Jesus knew that. Jesus knows that. And to make it all the more complex, Jesus was calling his followers to a new kind of real love. It wasn't going to be enough to just love the people you knew and the people you liked. And that whole Old Testament thing where it says you should love the strangers among you, Jesus took that and blew it wide open and said, no, you love everybody. He commanded his disciples to love in a way that they had not expected, to love through service, through doing things for others. And to make it clear what he was asking of them, he washed their feet as an example. Love needs to be active and more concerned about the other than about ourselves. And so Jesus showed us that the love in the kingdom of God means that you are willing to take the last place in line, or the worst seat at the table, or maybe no seat at all. Christ calls us to love concretely and to carry the burdens of those who are suffering, even if they're half a world away and classified as our enemy. Jesus said we are to love our enemies and pray for those who hate us. Loving the way that Jesus loves can be risky and even dangerous and hard work. It's directive and corrective to our behavior. Love one another as I have loved you, so also you should love one another. The love of Jesus, the love we receive, is not just for you and I or just for you and Jesus. It is meant to be shared far and wide, again and again, not just on special occasions or in designated offerings, but we are called daily to love one another as Christ loved us. For centuries, the symbol of Christ's love for us and his sacrifice has been the sign of the cross. We have it everywhere as a reminder to us, to ourselves, of who we are and who Jesus is and what he did. But there has been a new symbol, a reclamation of an old symbol. These days, when a layperson is consecrated, set aside to be a deacon in the church, the symbol that they receive is not a stole like a pastor would receive, but a bowl and a towel, because they are called to do word and service ministry. And so the bowl and the towel are a symbol of Jesus washing the feet of the disciples and are a reminder that that's the kind of love that we are called to as well. That's the image that John gives to his community and that he gives to us to say, this is what you are supposed to be. This is what you are called to do. If you haven't washed someone's feet before, try it sometime. Dirty feet. Go for some really dirty feet. There's something about it. And washing somebody else's feet when they're old and crinkly and not so lovely, it's hard work sometimes. My dad was in the hospital at one point, and his feet were dry, and he has never had pretty feet. Or if he did, they were long before I was born. And he said to Katie, would you put some lotion on my feet? And I thought, oh gosh. She was a youngish teenager. I was ready for her to say, Grandpa, are you kidding me? She'd seen his feet. Who'd want to do that? And instead, she sat down on the floor in his hospital room and got out the lotion and put it on his feet and massaged it all in and took care of him. And you could just tell from the expression on his face how much better he felt and what a kind and gentle act it had been. The tools of our trade should be those kinds of things, towels and lotion and bowls, helping someone else feel more the way God intended them to feel. Ours are the tools of a servant caring for a weary traveler, the tools of one who is willing to humble themselves at the feet of another person out of care, not out of duty, but out of love. This is the sense memory that Jesus created. You can almost feel the water and the towel, and maybe there was lotion even, a smell of something lovely to make those men feel cooler after their weary travels. We are called to remember to be that kind of people, to give that kind of love, and we are called to ask people if they know, and if they don't, to share the story clearly and loudly, to sing the song and make it known that we are people of love and that our love goes beyond words. It comes in actions.